Welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This is Michael Hansen. The Mind Web story for this half hour was first published in the magazine of fantasy and science fiction, November of 1972. This is The Meeting, written by Frederick Pohl and C.M. Kornbluth. Harry Vladek was too large a man for his Volkswagen, but he was too poor a man to trade it in. And as things were going, he was going to stay that way a long time. He applied the brakes carefully while he parked in a neatly graveled lot and squeezed out of the door. The upsetting telephone call from Dr. Nicholson on his mind, he locked the car up and went into the school building. The Parent Teachers Association of the Bingham County School for Exceptional Children was holding its first meeting of the term. Of the 20 people already there, Vladek knew only Mrs. Adler, the principal or headmistress or owner of the school. She was the one he needed to talk to most, he thought. Would there be any chance to see her privately? Right now, she sat across the room at her scuffed golden oak desk in a posture chair, talking in low, rapid tones with a gray-haired woman in a tan suit. A teacher? She seemed too old to be a parent, although his wife had told him some of the kids seemed to be 20 or more. It was 8:30, and the parents were still driving up to the school, a converted building that had once been a big country house, almost a mansion. The living room was full of elegant reminders of that. Two chandeliers, intricate vine-leaf molding on the plaster above the dropped ceiling. The pink-veined white marble fireplace, unfortunately prominent because of the unsuitable andirons, too cheap and too small, that now stood in it. Golden oak sliding double doors to the hall, and visible through them a grim fireproof staircase of concrete and steel. They must, Vladek thought, they must have had to rip out a beautiful wooden thing to install the fireproof stairs for compliance with the state school laws. People kept coming in, single men, single women, occasionally a couple. He wondered how the couples managed their babysitting problem. The subtitle on the school's letterhead was "An Institution for Emotionally Disturbed and Cerebrally Damaged Children Capable of Education." Harry's 9-year-old Thomas was one of the emotionally disturbed ones. With a taste of envy, he wondered if cerebrally damaged children could be babysat by any reasonably competent grown-up. Thomas could not. The Vladeks had not had an evening out together since he was 2, so that tonight Margaret was holding the fort at home, no doubt worrying herself sick about the call from Dr. Nicholson, while Harry was representing the family at the PTA. As the room filled up, chairs were getting scarce. A young couple was standing at the end of a row near him, looking around for a pair of empty seats. "Here," he said to them. "Here, I'll move over." The woman smiled politely, and the man said thanks. Emboldened by an ashtray on the empty seat in front of him, Harry pulled out his pack of cigarettes and offered it to them, but it turned out they were non-smokers. Harry lit up anyway, listening to what was going on around him. Everybody was talking. Harry finally said to the young man next to him, "My name's Vladek. I'm Tommy's father. He's in the beginners group." "That's where ours is," said the young man. "He's Vern, 6 years old, blond like me. Maybe you've seen him." Harry did not try very hard to remember. The 2 or 3 times he had picked Tommy up after class, he had not been able to tell one child from another in the great bustle of departure. Coats, handkerchiefs, hats, one little girl who always hid in the supply closet, and a little boy who never wanted to go home and hung on to the teacher. The young man introduced himself and his wife. They were named Murray and Celia Logan. Harry leaned over the man to shake the wife's hand, and she said, "Aren't you new here?" Yes, Tommy's been in the school a month. We moved in from Elmira to be near it. Tommy's nine, but the reason he's in the beginner's group is that, well, Mrs. Adler thought it would make the adjustment easier. Logan pointed to a suntanned man in the first row. You see that fellow with the glasses? He moved here from Texas. Of course, he's got money. It must be a good place. Logan grinned, his expression a little nervous. How's your son? Vladek asked. Well, that little rascal. You know, last week I got him another copy of the My Fair Lady album. I guess he's used up four or five of them already. He goes around singing, you know, Loverly, Loverly. But look at you. No. Mine doesn't talk, said Harry. And Mrs. Logan said judiciously, well, ours talks, not to anybody, though. It's like a wall. Yeah, I know. Has your Vern showed much improvement, you know, with the school? Murray Logan pursed his lips. Well, I would say yes. The bedwetting's not too good, you know, but life's a great deal smoother in some ways. You know, you don't hope for a dramatic breakthrough, but in little things, day by day, it goes smoother. Mostly smoother. Of course, there are setbacks. Harry nodded, thinking of 7 years of setbacks and 2 years of growing worry and puzzlement before that. He said, Mrs. Adler told me that, for example, a special outbreak of destructiveness might mean something like a plateau in speech therapy. So the child fights it and breaks out in some other direction. That, too, said Logan. Yes, but what I meant... they're starting. Vladek nodded, stubbing out his cigarette and absentmindedly lighting another. His stomach was not enough again. He wondered at these other parents who seemed so safe and, well, untouched. Wasn't it the same with them as with Margaret and himself? And it had been a long time since either of them had felt the world comfortable around them, even without Dr. Nicholson pressing for a decision. He forced himself to lean back and look as tranquil as the others. Mrs. Adler was tapping her desk with a ruler. I think everybody who is coming is here, she said, and leaned against the desk and waited for the room to quiet down. She was short, dark, plump, and surprisingly pretty. She did not look at all like a competent professional. She looked so unlike her role that, in fact, Harry's heart had sunk 3 months ago when their correspondence about admitting Tommy had been climaxed by the long trip from Elmira for the interview. He had expected a steel-gray lady with rimless glasses, a Valkyrie, and a white smock, like the nurse who had held wriggling, screaming Tommy while waiting for the suppository to quiet him down for his first EEG, a disheveled old fraud. He didn't know what. Anything except this pretty young woman. Another blind alley, he had thought in despair. Another after 100 too many already. First was wait for him to outgrow it. He doesn't. And then... we must reconcile ourselves to God's will. But you don't want to. Then give him the prescription 3 times a day for 3 months, and it doesn't work. Then chase around for 6 months with a child guidance clinic to find out it's only letterheads and one circuit riding doctor who doesn't have time for anything. And then after 4 dreary, weepy weeks of soul searching, the state training school, and find out it has an 8-year waiting list. Then the private custodial school, and find there $5,500 a year without medical treatment. And where do you get $5,500 a year? And all the time, everybody warns you, as if you didn't know it, hurry, hurry, do something, catch it early. This is the critical stage. Delay's fatal. And then this soft-looking little woman, how could she do anything? She had rapidly shown him how. She had questioned Margaret and Harry incisively, turned to Tommy, rampaging through that same room like a rogue bull, and turned his rampage into a game. In 3 minutes, he was happily experimenting with an indestructible old wind-up cabinet Victrola, and Mrs. Adler was saying to the Vladeks, don't count on a miracle cure, there isn't any, but improvements, yes, and I think we can help Tommy. Perhaps she had, thought Vladek bleakly. Perhaps she was helping as much as anyone ever could. Meanwhile, Mrs. Adler had quickly and pleasantly welcomed the parents, suggested they remain for coffee and get to know each other, and introduced the PTA president, a Mrs. Rose, tall, prematurely gray, and very executive. This being the first meeting of the term, she said, there are no minutes to be read, so we'll get to the committee work reports. What about the transportation problem, Mr. Bear? The man who got up was old, more than 60. Harry wondered what it was like to have your life crowned with a late, retarded child. He wore all the trappings of success, a $400 suit, an electronic wristwatch, a large gold fraternal ring, and in a slight German accent, he said,
I was to the district school board, and they are not cooperating. My lawyer looked it up, and the trouble is all one word. What the law says, the school board may, that is the word may, reimburse parents of handicapped children for transportation to private schools. Not shall, you understand, but may. They were very frank with me. They said they just did not want to spend the money. They have the impression we are all rich people here.
Slight sour laughter around the room.
So my lawyer made an appointment and we appeared before the full board and presented the case. We don't care, reimbursement, a school bus, anything, so we can relieve the transportation burden a little. And the answer was no.
He shrugged and remained standing looking at Mrs. Rose, who said, Thank you, Mr. Bear. Does anyone have any suggestions? And one woman said angrily, Put some heat on them. We're all voters. And a man said,
Publicity. That's right. The principle is perfectly clear in the law. One taxpayer's child is supposed to get the same service as another taxpayer's child. We ought to write letters to the papers.
Mr. Bear said,
Wait a minute. Letters, I don't think mean anything, but I've got the public relations firm, and I'll tell them to take a little time off my food specialties and use it for the school. They can use their own know-how, how to do it. They're experts.
This was moved, seconded, and passed while Murray Logan whispered to Vladek. He's Mary Jane Garlic Mayonnaise. He had a 12-year-old girl in very bad shape that Mrs. Adler helped in her old private class. He bought this building for her along with a couple of other parents. Harry Vladek was musing over how it felt to be a parent who could buy a building for a school that would help your child while the committee reports continued. Sometime later, to Harry's dismay, the business turned to financing, and there was a vote to hold a fundraising theater party for which each couple with a child in the school would have to sell at least 5 pairs of orchestra seats at $60 a pair. Now, let's get this straightened out right now, he thought, and put up his hand.
My name's Harry Vladek, and, well, I'm brand new here, in the school and in the county. I work for a big insurance company, and I was lucky enough to get a transfer here so my boy can go to the school. But, look, I just don't know anybody yet that I can sell tickets to for $60. That's an awful lot of money for my kind of people.
Mrs. Rose told him, It's an awful lot of money for most of us. You can get rid of your tickets, though. We've got to. It doesn't matter if you try 100 people and 95 say no, just as long as the others say yes. Vladek sat down, already calculating. Well, there's Mr. Krein at the office. He was a bachelor. He did go to the theater, maybe work up an office raffle for another pair or 2 pairs. And then there was, let's see, the real estate dealer who had sold them the house. There was a lawyer they'd used for the closing. Well, it had been explained to him that the tuition, while decidedly not nominal, $1,800 a year, in fact, did not cover the cost per child. Somebody had to pay for the speech therapist, the dance therapist, the full-time psychologist, and the part-time psychiatrist, and all the others. And it might as well be Mr. Krein at the office, and the lawyer. And half an hour later, Mrs. Rose looked at the agenda, checked off an item, and said, That seems to be all for tonight. Mr. and Mrs. Perry brought us some very nice cookies, and we all know that Mrs. Howe's coffee is out of this world. They're in the beginner's room, and we hope you'll all stay to get acquainted. The meeting is adjourned. Harry and the Logans joined the polite surge to the beginner's room where Tommy spent his mornings.
There's Miss Hackett, said Celia Logan.
That was the beginner's teacher. She saw them and came over, smiling. Harry had seen her only in a tent-like smock, her armor against chocolate milk, finger paints, and the sudden jets from the water play corner of the room. Without it, she was handsomely middle-aged in a green pantsuit. "I'm glad you parents have met," she said. "I wanted to tell you that your little boys are getting along very nicely. They're forming a sort of conspiracy against the others in the class. Vern swipes their toys and he gives them to Tommy."
"He does?"
cried Logan. "Yes, indeed. I think he's beginning to relate. And Mr. Vladek, Tommy's taken his thumb out of his mouth for minutes at a time. At least half a dozen times this morning without my saying a word. You know, I thought I noticed he was sort of tapering off. I couldn't be sure. You're positive about that?" "Absolutely. And I bluffed him into drawing a face. He gave me that glare of his when the others were drawing, so I started to take the paper away. He grabbed it back and scribbled a kind of Picasso-ish face in 1 second flat. I wanted to save it for Mrs. Vladek and you, but Tommy got it and shredded it in that methodical way he has. I wish I could have seen it. Oh, there'll be others. I can see the prospect of real improvement in your boys. I have a private case afternoons that's really tricky. A 9-year-old boy like you or Tommy, he's not bad except for one thing. He thinks Donald Duck is out to get him. His parents somehow managed to convince themselves for 2 years that he was kidding them in spite of 3 broken TV picture tubes. Then they went to a psychiatrist and learned the score. Oh, excuse me, I want to talk to Mrs. Adler." Logan shook his head and said, "You know, I guess we could be worse off, Vladek. Vern giving something to another boy? How do you like that? And did you hear about that other boy? Poor kid, when I hear something like that. And then there was the bear girl. I always think it's worse when it's a little girl, because, you know, you worry with little girls that somebody will take advantage. But our boys will make out, Vladek. You heard what Miss Hackett said." Harry was suddenly impatient to get home to his wife. I don't think I'll stay for coffee. Or do they expect you to? No, leave when you like. I have a half-hour drive." And he went through the golden oak doors, past the ugly but fireproof staircase out into the graveled parking lot. His real reason was that he wanted very much to get home before Margaret fell asleep, so he could tell her about the thumb-sucking. Things were happening, definite things, after only a month. And Tommy drew a face. And Miss Hackett said... He stopped in the middle of the lot. He had remembered about Dr. Nicholson. And besides, what was it exactly that Miss Hackett had said? Anything about a normal life? Not anything about a cure? A real improvement, she had said. But improvement how far? He lit a cigarette, turned, and plowed his way back through the parents to Mrs. Adler. Mrs. Adler, may I see you just for a moment? She came with him immediately out of earshot of the others.
Did you enjoy the meeting, Mr. Vladek?
Oh, yeah. But what I wanted to see you about is that... Well, I have to make a decision. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to go to. It would help a lot if you could tell me, well, what are Tommy's chances? She waited a moment before she responded.
Are you considering committing him, Mr. Vladek?
No, it's not that exactly. It's, well... What can you tell me, Mrs. Adler? I know a month isn't much, but is he ever going to be like everybody else? He could see from her face that she had done this before and hated it. She said patiently,
Everybody else, Mr. Vladek, includes some terrible people who just don't happen technically to be handicapped. Our objective is not to make Tommy like everybody else. It's just to help him become the best and most rewarding Tommy Vladek he can.
Yes, but what's going to happen later on? I mean, if Margaret and I... if anything happens to us...
There's simply no way to know, Mr. Vladek. I wouldn't give up hope, but I can't tell you to expect miracles.
Margaret was not asleep. She was waiting up for him in the small living room of the small new house.
How was he?
Vladek asked, as each of them had asked the other on returning home for 7 years. She looked as though she had been crying, but she was calm enough and said, "Oh, not too bad. I had to lie down with him to get him to go to bed. He took his gland gunk well, though. He licked the spoon." "That's good." And he told her about the drawing of the face, about the conspiracy with little Vern Logan, and about the thumb-sucking. He could see how pleased she was. But she only said, "Dr. Nicholson called again. I told him not to bother you." "He didn't bother me, Harry. He was very nice. I promised him that you'd call back." "It's 11 o'clock, Margaret. I'll call him in the morning." "No, I said tonight, no matter what time. He's waiting, and he said to be sure and reverse the charges." "I wish I'd never answered the son of a bitch's letter. Margaret, is there any coffee? I didn't stay for it at the school." She had put the water on the boil when she heard the car whine into the driveway, and the instant coffee was ready in the cup, she poured it and said, "You have to talk to him, Harry. He has to know tonight."
No, tonight. "What do you want me to do, Margaret? How do I make a decision like this? Today, I picked up the phone and called the company psychologist, and when his secretary answered, I said I had the wrong number. I didn't know what to say to him."
"I'm not trying to press you, Harry, but he has to know." Vladek put down the cup and lit his 50th cigarette of the day. The little dining room, it wasn't that, it was half breakfast alcove off the tiny kitchen, but they called it a dining room even to each other. The little dining room was full of Tommy. The new paint on the wall, where Tommy had peeled off the cups and spoons wallpaper. The Tommy-proof latch on the stove. The one odd aqua seat that didn't match the others on the kitchen chairs, where Tommy had methodically gouged it with the handle of his spoon. He said, I know what my mother would tell me. Talk to the priest. You know, maybe I should, but we've never been to Mass here." Margaret sat down and helped herself to one of his cigarettes. She was still a good-looking woman. She hadn't gained a pound since Tommy was born, although she usually looked tired. She said carefully and straightforwardly, "We agreed, Harry. We agreed. You said you would talk to Mrs. Adler, and you've done that. We said if she didn't think Tommy would ever straighten out, that we would talk to Dr. Nicholson. I know it's hard on you, and I know I'm not much help, but I don't know what to do, and I have to let you decide." Harry looked at his wife lovingly and hopelessly, and at that moment the phone rang. It was, of course, Dr. Nicholson. I haven't made a decision. You're rushing me, Dr. Nicholson."
"No, Mr. Vladek, it's not me that's rushing you. The other boy's heart gave out an hour ago. That's what's rushing you."
You mean he's dead?"
"He's on the heart machine, Mr. Vladek. We can hold him for at least 18 hours, maybe 24. The brain is all right. We're getting very good waves on the oscilloscope. The tissue match with your boy is satisfactory, better than satisfactory. There's a flight out of JFK at 6:15 in the morning, and I've reserved space for you, your wife, and Tommy. We'll be met at the airport, and you can be here by noon, so we have time. Only just time, Mr. Vladek. It's up to you now."
I can't decide that, Doctor. Don't you understand? I don't know how."
"I do understand, Mr. Vladek. I have a suggestion. Would you like to come down anyhow? I think it might help you to see the other boy, and you can talk to his parents. They feel they owe you something even for going this far, and they want to thank you."
"Oh, no."
"All they want is for their boy to have a life. They don't expect anything but that. They'll give you custody of the child, yours and theirs. He's a very fine little boy, Mr. Vladek. 8 years old. Reads beautifully. Makes model airplanes. They let him ride his bike because he was so sensible and reliable, and the accident wasn't his fault. The truck came right up on the sidewalk and hit him."
That's like giving me a bribe. That's telling me I can trade Tommy in for somebody smarter and nicer."
"I didn't mean it that way, Mr. Vladek. I only wanted you to know the kind of boy you can save."
You don't even know the operation's going to work."
"No. No, not positively. I can tell you that we've transplanted animals, including primates and human cadavers, in one pair of terminal cases, but you're right, Mr. Vladek, we've never had a transplant into a well body. I've shown you all the records. We went over them with your own doctor when we first talked about this possibility 5 months ago. This is the first case since then when the match was close and there was a real hope for success, but you're right. It's still unproved. Unless you help us prove it. For what it's worth, I think it will work, but no one can be sure.
Margaret had left the kitchen, but Vladek knew where she was from the scratchy click in the earpiece in the bedroom listening on the extension phone. He said at last,
"Look, I can't say now, Dr. Nicholson. I'll call you back in half an hour. I really can't do any more than that right now."
"That's a very great deal, Mr. Vladek. I'll be waiting right here for your call."
Harry sat down and drank the rest of his coffee. You had to be an expert in a lot of things to get along, he was thinking. What did he know about brain transplants? In one way, a lot. He knew that the surgery part was supposed to be straightforward, but the tissue rejection was the problem. But Dr. Nicholson thought he had that licked. He knew that every doctor he had talked to, and he had now talked to seven of them, had agreed that medically it was probably sound enough, and that every one of them had carefully clammed up when he got the conversation around to whether it was right. It was his decision, not theirs, they all said, sometimes just by their silence. But who was he to decide? Margaret appeared in the doorway and said, "Harry, let's go upstairs and look at Tommy. Is that supposed to make it easier for me to murder my son?"
"We talked that out, Harry, and we agreed it isn't murder. Whatever it is, I only think that Tommy ought to be with us when we decide, even if he doesn't know what we're deciding."
The two of them stood next to the outsized crib that held their son, looking in the night light at the long, fair lashes against the chubby cheeks and the pouted lips around the thumb. Reading. Model airplanes. Riding a bike. Against a quick sketch of a face and the occasional cherished tempestuous, bruising flurry of kisses. Vladek stayed there a full half hour. Then, as he had promised, went back to the kitchen, picked up the phone, and began to dial. First published in the magazine of fantasy and science fiction for November 1972. This is Michael Hansen. Technical production for this program by Rich Grody and Steve Gordon. MindWebs is a production of WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.